is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, welcome to it. 6 minutes after on this Thursday. I'm glad you're here for the conversation. It's the Steve Gruber Show. If you'd like to join me, it's 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. My friends at Northville Lumber making this hour possible. Northville Lumber sells more maintenance-free Trex decking and railing than anyone in the Midwest. To find out more, just log on to northvillelumber.com, serving all of southern Michigan. So this battle continues, and if you missed this in the wake of everything else, Donald Trump considering making an appointment today to his new FBI director, and who that will be, Joe Lieberman, on the short list. Joe Lieberman of Connecticut could come out of retirement, former Democratic senator, former candidate for vice president of the United States in the year 2000 with Al Gore. But who knows? That's what I say. Donald Trump, no, not really a Republican, not really a Democrat, just a guy trying to figure out the swamp. Good luck to him there. Tom in Grand Rapids checking in. Tom, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Steve. I don't know if you folks remember when Mueller was being interviewed by the U.S. House Committee, Chaffetz was in charge, but Jim Jordan was throwing questions at him regarding the so-called investigation into the IRS targeting conservatives.
Yes.
And Jordan from Ohio asked him, how many agents do you have on this case, on this investigation? And Mueller looked at him like a deer in the headlights, and I can't answer that. So then Jordan asked him, well, who's the lead investigator? Who's in charge of the investigation? Once again, Mueller couldn't answer the question. So this is our top-notch Boy Scout, once again, Eagle Scout, whatever the hell these guys' terms are, just like Comey. These guys are compromised as hell.
Well, you know, Rosenstein collapsing to the Democratic demands for a special counsel, even though there's no crime committed. There is no crime that has been unearthed thus far after months of investigations. But these feckless people cave into the Democrats, who pound the drum and pound the drum because that's all they've got. And in the meanwhile, the American people's work is not getting done. And that's why I say anybody that joins onto this into this folly should pay a political price. And yes, I'm talking to the people like Justin Amash here in Michigan. I mean, how can this guy come out and say that he would support impeachment? He's using the I word. Is he out of his mind?
Steve, on that, I'm really disappointed that Amash doesn't have the perception to see through the BS of the mainstream press. This is what's disturbing to me.
Yeah, is he in your district? Is he your congressman?
Yeah. I voted for the guy a couple times already because he had the guts to stand up.
Yeah, you might want to rethink that. Yeah, you might want to rethink that going forward, Tom.
Yeah.
Right. Word for the wise. Thank you for checking in. 888-900-9966. I'll tell you who did nail it. Dennis Kucinich nailed it. Former congressman from Ohio, former mayor of Cleveland, hardcore leftist. You know, a guy who I often thought was, you know, just a bit out to lunch on some things. But on this particular account, here's what Dennis Kucinich had to say on Fox yesterday. Think about this. This is a guy who's hard left. He agrees. Him and I don't see eye to eye on much of anything, but he is intellectually honest about what's really going on with this alleged Russia investigation. Go ahead and roll it.
Well, you have a politicization of the agencies that is resulting in leaks from anonymous, unknown people, and the intention is to take down a president. Now, this is very dangerous to America. It's a threat to our republic. It constitutes a clear and present danger to our way of life. So we have to be asking, what is the motive of these people? Who's putting these leaks out? Why doesn't somebody come forward and make a charge and put their name and a reputation behind it instead of attacking through the media and not substantiating their position?
Sir, you agree with me. This is a real danger when you have the intelligence community in an election season under the guise of national security that are spying on an opposition party candidate and transition team at a 600% increase rate from the years prior to the election season?
Well, we have to remember this. You know, our first allegiance is to our country. This isn't about one president. This is about the political process of the United States of America being under attack by intelligence agencies and individuals in those agencies. Yes, as you said, there might be some good people in there, but there are certain individuals who are the lifers who want to be able to direct the policy of the country. And if a president stands in their way, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, they'll just try to run.
There you go. We'll leave it right there. I mean, Kucinich nailed it. You know, these people are in there, you know, anonymous sources and leaks and problems. That's where the crimes are being committed. There is no allegation of a single crime being committed by Donald Trump or anybody in his transition team thus far, although it's possible that Michael Flynn failed to report some income, which would be a minor infraction. He might have to pay a fine. He certainly wouldn't go to prison for it. Not likely, anyhow. On the hotline, Jesse in Grand Blanc today. Jesse, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve. This is very simple. Let's recall Donald Trump's remark at the debate when he said he might accept the results of the election with the phrase hashtag resist. There's no difference. They don't accept the results of the election. Very simple. And my other comment is, primary every single one of these stupid Republicans. Every one of them, until we get rid of all of them.
Primary them all. You know, I've heard that for the last 24 hours, or I guess a little bit less.
Every one of them.
Every single one of them. If you're going to stand with Nancy Pelosi, you do not stand with me. That's where I stand. If you stand with Nancy Pelosi and that group of people, you do not stand with me. There's not a crime that has been committed, Jesse, and I appreciate you calling in today. Thank you very much. The hotline number, by the way, 888-900-9966. I mean, let's be honest, Democrats and their media allies finally got their man, because after weeks of political browbeating and pressure, Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein collapsed Wednesday and announced that he has named a special counsel, Robert Mueller. These expeditions rarely end well for anyone. Let's keep that in mind, for anyone. Democrats are hoping this one will, you know, destroy the Trump administration and Donald Trump for the next 4 years. Let me tell you something. If it does, the Democrats are just as likely to pay a very high price on Election Day. The Democrats are just as likely to pay a high price on Election Day as Republicans, because what's happening while the Trump administration is tied in knots? Nothing is happening. Tax reform doesn't occur. The southern border doesn't get secured. People's incomes do not go up because the economy does not improve, because Wall Street is in doubt. Problems occur elsewhere. This special counsel, when there's a special counsel to invest, because their job is to find something. Their job, Robert Mueller's job, is to find something, find somebody to prosecute for something. Otherwise, it's a complete waste of time. We'll see if he's an honest broker. I hope he is. But when I see all the Democrats jumping up and down and cheering, it concerns me deeply. Thursday on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
It's mine. It's now or never. I ain't gonna live forever.
It is 18 after. You know, we should ban Bon Jovi from being on the airwaves here for his ridiculous points of view sometimes. Anyway, I'm just joking a little bit. I like his music. Don't care for it when he you know, passes his comments along. The conversation about no-fault insurance in Michigan has been hot and heavy since about 1976, as you well know. Michigan, the only state where you have unlimited coverage of catastrophic care. There are about 13,000 people being tended to from that fund of roughly $20 billion or more now that's been paid into since then. Some folks, though, calling for an overhaul of that system. Pete Kuhnmensch is here from drivingmichigan.org. He's the executive director. Pete, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you.
So a lot of calls over the years to reform the state's no-fault insurance system and make it more affordable for drivers. Like I just mentioned, Michigan, the only state in the country that mandates motorists buy unlimited lifetime medical benefits.
Right.
When you talk about overhaul, where would you begin and how would that look and how would that work?
Well, you know, the fundamental issue, as you have pointed out, is that Michigan is, unique in its approach to this thing and the mandate of lifetime unlimited medical coverage being a component of what you have to purchase as a consumer here in Michigan. And no other state even comes close to that. I mean, the next closest mandated requirement is in New York at a minimum of $50,000 coverage of medical care. So certainly the medical component, the lifetime unlimited, is one of the major reasons. And within that system, unfortunately, too, there are factors such as excessive medical fees because of the structure of the no-fault law that continue to be charged by health care providers. And quite frankly, if we were to do one thing in our no-fault system and keep it intact, a medical fee schedule would have the most impact overall if we're going to continue with the unlimited mandate.
So explain that to me, if you would, because I'm curious about that portion of it. I think the bill this year is $170 per vehicle, which is an odd way to go about it. It seems to me you would charge per driver, but that's not the way it's done. It's charged per vehicle, my understanding. But this one change in putting together a medical fee publishing, a scale, if you will, how would that help things? How would that change things?
Well, right now, under most health care plans, they are subject to a medical fee schedule, whether negotiated by the health carrier or things like Medicaid and Medicare. The government imposes a specific medical fee schedule. Even in our state workers' compensation insurance system, we've had a medical fee schedule that's actually overseen by an advisory panel of health care providers and employers for the last 25 years, since the mid-1980s, so 35 years, actually. And what that does is help contain those costs. Unfortunately, under the no-fault system, and only under our no-fault system, healthcare providers are allowed to charge whatever they want. And we've got examples of charges being 3, 4, sometimes 5 times the amount that they normally receive and accept from other payers. So there's a huge discrepancy in the fees that are being charged by the medical community to the no-fault system only.
So let me ask you this. So this occurs to me then. If that's true, if you can create a medical fee schedule and it would control costs, because if you're paying 3 or 4 times, if that's true, obviously that's a problem that should be addressed no matter how you look at it. Would you be, because here's my concern is I've paid into the system in Michigan the entire time I've been a legal driver, right? I've paid my fees however many years in a row. And so I've contributed to this $20 billion plus fund that's out there. And so to me, it's like, why would I want to, give that up? Because I've paid thousands and thousands of dollars into it. So why would I give that up to save $170 one year? Maybe your point is if you had a medical fee schedule that would control costs and therefore it wasn't, out of control, that $20 billion fund could be maintained with much lower payments from me, the driver. That's what it sounded like to me. Maybe it could be maintained, but I wouldn't have to pay nearly as much.
Right. Well, you're looking at it as a kind of pay-as-you-go system. And to the extent that the Catastrophic Claims Association, which is what we're talking about, only reimburses an insurer after they've expended the funds on the patient. So
correct.
A little bit different mechanism. So it's not a direct reimbursement of the expenses, but it reimburses the insurer after they've committed to their obligations and so forth. And it's actually designed, Steve, to actually backstop the financial solvency of our smaller insurers of the state back in 78 when it was formed, because they couldn't purchase what's called reinsurance in the private market at that time for an unlimited medical requirement. So the state stepped
in. Yeah, most people don't realize that. Most people don't realize that insurance companies insure each other against catastrophic loss. Like, for example, the World Trade Centers, they were co-insured, they're cross-insured, right?
Right, and this is a state system to pool those resources. It's a mandatory system that every company has to participate in. Yes, you ultimately pay for that in your premium as an insured, but you can't look at it like you've paid thousands of dollars into that, Steve, because that $160 assessment, which it is now, is an amount that's calculated in order to pay benefits for people that are injured in the current fiscal year.
Sure, but here,
for the rest of their life.
I come back to this question.
That money is like a retirement reserve set aside for people that have already been injured. So So, you know, the idea that this is some kind of an investment account, you have, you know, a financial interest in that, you don't, unless, unfortunately, you're catastrophically injured, and then that fund will backstop your insurance company.
Right, but here's my question.
Make sure that you receive your payments.
Here's my question. And sure. I've only got about 30 seconds, just so I'm clear on this. But, okay, the problem that I see is that it charges vehicles and not drivers. Therefore, if I'm catastrophically injured and I don't even own a vehicle, I'm going to be covered by this fund, am I not?
That's correct.
Having contributed nothing.
Circumstances, yep. Yeah, and, you know, the answer to that is, I don't know, back in 1973 when they, well, excuse me, 78 when they constructed the MCCA, that was the decision of the legislature back then. I guess they felt that that was the most fair way to go about it.
Well, Pete, I'm telling you,
unfortunately, go ahead.
We should have you back again because there's so much to talk about. It's a big conversation. I'm up against a hard break here, but great conversation. Okay. Love to have you back again soon, though, Pete, because I think people need to understand where their money's going, how it's being spent, and if we're doing it the best way possible. Pete Kuhnmensch, I greatly appreciate it. He is from the drivingmichigan.org. You can find out more at drivingmichigan.org. Pete, thank you very much.
You bet, Stephen. And, you know, to do something about this, I'd encourage your listeners, all your legislators, and to ask them what they're doing.
Covering Michigan and the world from his bunker below the bridge, here is Steve Gruber.
I look at what's going on in Washington, and I look at this hyperventilating, this feeding frenzy, this frothing at the mouth over Russia, which, by the way, let me remind you once again, the Democrats didn't care about until about 3 o'clock in the morning on the 9th of November, when they realized their candidate had lost a sure thing. When Hillary Clinton had blown a sure thing, then suddenly the Russian thing was the most important thing in the world. Now, investigations have been going on since that day about collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, and thus far, there's been evidence of not one single crime that I'm aware of, and yet, it continues. Now, James Comey puts out a claim that comes out of some memo that he wrote saying that Trump had asked him to look beyond James, beyond Michael Flynn, that is, and focus on the leaks, which is what he should have done because the leaks continue. And the leaks, as Dennis Kucinich most aptly pointed out, are the biggest threat to American security that are going on currently and should be prosecuted. My next guest, Pete Hoekstra, a good friend of the program and key to us being informed, is back. Pete, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you. Thank you. Good morning, Steve.
I don't know if you... Dennis Kucinich, oftentimes hard left guy who I don't have a lot in common with, but here he is on television saying, listen, the problem is Washington is fighting inside itself. We're not being attacked by the Russians. We're attacking ourselves internally. That's the big problem. We're not controlling the leaks. That's what should be prosecuted. And I'm thinking Dennis Kucinich just nailed it.
He did, and Dennis has also talked fairly extensively about, you know, the abuses perhaps of the NSA or the FBI in terms of observing Americans. And he believes, and I think there's concrete evidence that, you know, he was surveilled. So you're right. I don't have a lot in common with Dennis either, but Dennis is a good guy. He was always a friendly guy, and, you know, he calls him as he sees him.
He called this one, honestly, that's for sure. All right, so a memo. Let's say, and nobody has seen, not one news agency, not NBC, not Reuters, not the Associated Press, nobody has seen this alleged memo from James Comey, and yet they're all going crazy about this memo that says that Donald Trump, you know, said, look beyond Michael Flynn, get rid of that investigation. No, what is a memo proof of? By the way, Pete, what would a memo prove if there was a memo? Is it proof of anything?
No, it's not proof of anything, although the indications are that the contemporaneous notes of an FBI official or a law enforcement official, you know, that those do have merit and they do have value when you go into court. So, you know, if a memo does exist, if the notes do exist, there could be some relevance here. But I think the key question and I think you nailed it when you started, Steve, is everybody's got to slow down. You know, I learned this when I was on the Intelligence Committee. You know, when you get a sliver of information, you don't start running off into conclusion. It's a data point, and what it does is it maybe leads you to look for other data points. But, you know, this memo, the supposed memo, the supposed leak of classified information by the president on Monday, by, you know, 24, 36 hours later, these things had either been partially or totally debunked as being major news stories. Yet there are people in Washington who are running with a couple of data points.
And that's all they've got. That's right.
They're running to the word impeachment. Republicans and Democrats, and it's like, hey, guys, slow way down. These are data points. This is not an analysis. This is media. These are second, third, fourth-hand reports of information that you don't even know if it's real or accurate. And you're talking, you're using that. It's the headlines of newspapers. It's for the media, some of the media. It's all about getting ratings.
It's reckless.
For politicians, it's all about getting on TV.
It's reckless, to say the least. And you say Republicans and Democrats alike. And my biggest concern here today is that when I see Justin Amash standing with Nancy Pelosi, if you will, using the impeachment order, when we have not one shred of evidence that anything illegal has occurred in all of the months of investigations, that's why Robert Mueller is being called a special counsel, not a special prosecutor, despite the terminology that CNN and others will use, special counsel. There's a big difference there, and it's an important differentiation. But when I see Justin Amash, a Republican, standing with Nancy Pelosi, I frankly think at this point he ought to be ashamed of himself.
I think anybody that has moved to and started talking about impeachment, like I said, like you said, Mueller is a special counsel. He has been assigned the task of investigating this. The Justice Department was very, very clear yesterday when they made this announcement. There is no implication or identification of a crime having taken place. This is for Mueller to take a look at what the Russians may or may not have done. And I'll tell you, I think this may be a two-edged sword.
I think so,
this
too.
This may come right back at the Democrats, because everybody says, well, you know, it's collusion or they were there to influence the election. You know, if the Russians are so good, Steve, they not only were worried about, you know, maybe trying to influence the election, but if we're going to give them so much credit, you then also have to say, well, they must then have also been planning activities post-election and how they could worm their way into positions of influence and manipulation.
That's
of
right.
The new administration.
It's just
and we
nonsensical.
All know that was going to be Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's nonsensical. And you make a good point that I want to focus on. Pete Hoekstra with us here. The blowback. A two-sided sword here, two-edged sword, because the blowback could come back to the Democrats, because if we're a year from now and we have not gotten tax reform and Obamacare has not been repealed and replaced because all of the people's work is stalled while this investigation goes on into the abyss, I will remind the listeners of 1998 when Newt Gingrich was no longer Speaker of the House and the Republicans were no longer in power after a successful impeachment of Bill Clinton, but the people were not impressed because their work was not being done. And if it comes right. That there's no fruit on this tree and that the attacks on Donald Trump were solely political in nature and had no substance, I don't think it bodes well for the Democrats come the next election.
No, I think that's, who knows how, you know, the next election is a long way off. And if we don't get tax reform, if we don't get health care reform, if we're not creating jobs in the economy and raising incomes and those types of things, the voters will be frustrated with Washington, and it will be hard to predict exactly who they will hold accountable. I think right now, though, in messaging and those types of things, as much as I hate to admit it, I think the Democrats have the momentum.
I think they do, too, but I say this to them. I say be careful what you wish for. You've got your special counsel now, but if it comes up empty, And the American people's work does not get done because you blocked everything along the way because you have a hatred for Donald Trump, I think that's problematic. I really do.
Yeah, but I think, remember, what the objective here is, they may hate Donald Trump, but their objective is national health care. Their objective is bigger government. And all of those types of things. And sure, they are attacking Donald Trump, but their ultimate goal is to implement their policies. And right now, the best mechanism for them to do that is to destroy Donald Trump.
That's right.
But, you know, they're not going, if they destroy Donald Trump, you know, they're not going to be satisfied. It's still all about, you know, implementing their agenda. They don't want
no question. Pete, we got to leave it there. As all, a great conversation, and you know, the frenzied pace will continue, my friend. Thank you as always.
All right, hey, have a great day.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
Well, if you're overstimulated from the news coverage, maybe it's time to find out something more fun to do. Like, you know, get a big bucket of popcorn, some candy, get a sugar buzz, you know, pound stuff and eat things you wouldn't normally, feel great and do the right thing, go to the movies. Ron Van Timmeren here with me now from Celebration Cinemas. Ron, welcome back.
Good morning, Steve.
Yeah, time to get stuff stuck in my teeth that I don't normally eat, Ron, because of all the toxicity on the news channels. Maybe it's time to go find something fun to do.
We can take you to outer space. We can take you back in time.
No, I said I didn't want to talk politics. I just said.
Oh, yeah, good one. Yeah.
Anyhow.
Hey, listen, by the way, King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, came out last weekend and did not very well at the box office, and even worse with the critics. But I went to see that movie, and I really liked it. I'm like, forget about the critics for this one. If you like movies like Lord of the Rings or Excalibur or, you know, those sword and sorcery sort of things, like Game of Thrones, I'm saying King Arthur's a pretty good one.
So you liked it. That's cool, you know, because you're right. It didn't do very well at the box. They spent a ton making it, didn't they?
Yeah, anywhere from 100 to maybe 175 million. I mean, they're going to lose money on this no matter what.
I guarantee you. I guarantee you, Ron, for half that much money, I can make a bad film. I swear. I can make a lousy film for a lot less money. Just give me the cash.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyhow, you liked it. That's cool.
This week, the new number one movie in America will be Alien Covenant, and I'm really working up my courage because I'm going to go see it tomorrow night, and it looks scary.
That's my alien impression. Do you like it? Remember the first movie with what was her name? You know, and the aliens coming out of her stomach. Yeah, you know, the alien movies.
Yes, exactly. Mm. I know. Of course, I remember. That's why I'm scared to go see this one.
You're gonna love it.
Ridley Scott's back directing it. He did the first one. This is actually set timeline-wise between the prequel to the 1979 Alien and the which is Prometheus and the 1979 movie. So we're kind of before Sigourney Weaver in her underpants. So that's where we're at with this Alien movie.
In her underpants.
I always remember about that.
Somehow I just find that term just kind of humors me in some way. I don't know. She's in her underpants. I think about 4-year-old boys wearing underpants, not Sigourney Weaver. Anyhow.
Okay, panties. There you go.
Anyhow. Yeah. So and the alien.
That's going to be the big one. That's rated R. PG movie for families this weekend is Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Long Haul. This is the fourth of one of those books that's been turned into a movie. Alicia Silverstone, Tom Everett in this one. Again, rated PG for the families.
Right. That series has done pretty well, obviously, as they're in the fourth edition.
Yeah, and they got a lot of books to go yet. So that's only tracking to do maybe 9 or 10 million this weekend. But again, good PG movie. Everything, that's the teen romance movie about the girl in the bubble. She grows up with allergies so bad that if she leaves her house and her protected environment, she's going to get sick. Well, guess what? The boy next door moves in, and he's cute, and she wants to go to the beach with him. And so with the comedy, the drama, the romance ensues. Everything.
Everything, all in one handy-dandy reusable package. All right, so that's all a lot of fun. Anything special going on?
A couple of alternative movies that are limited releases. Norman, starring Richard Gere, that's getting the best reviews of the weekend here. He's kind of a fixer, an operator, living in New York. A little bit of politics in this movie, so I'm not sure what to do with that storyline for you guys, but it looks like a good movie. And then lowriders, you know, based on the culture, the Latino culture of those cool cars that they fix up, and a little family story that goes with that. So
lowrider, yeah, that's good. And you can always get your tickets online, right?
And get your tickets online in advance. Reserve your seats, especially Alien this weekend. It's going to be a big couple of sellouts occasionally. So, CelebrationCinema.com. That's where you do that.
And I'd go to Alien, but I think Ivy would hide it under the seat for most of the movie. So I might have to wait on to see that one a little bit later. But Ron Van Timmeren, always a pleasure. Where will we find you?
See you at the movie, Steve.
Thank you, Ron Van Timmeren, everybody, here on the Steve Gruber Show. He's here on Thursdays to tell you what's going on at the movies. Earlier today, we had a caller, Russell, called me and reminded me that today is the 90th anniversary of the worst case of domestic terrorism in American history up until that point in 1927 when the Bath Consolidated School was bombed by Andrew Kehoe. He was a school board treasurer. He had been the township clerk, a graduate of Michigan State, where he studied electrical engineering, considered highly intelligent. Owned a great farm in the area. In fact, neighbors said he was the perfect neighbor. It's how he was described. But he got really angry over the taxes that were assessed against his farm, and it was an average-sized farm. And he was really angry, and he also worked part-time as a janitor at the Consolidated School. And over a course of time, he packed the basement with dynamite. If you haven't seen or heard or understand this story, you really should go back and research it. May the 18th, 1927, you know, back in a time when these sorts of things didn't, the Roaring Twenties. 45 people were killed at the school, plus his wife. So 46 deaths in all. In fact, he killed the superintendent and so forth because he rigged a car bomb. It wasn't just the school that blew up, also his car blew up. And it would have been much worse, except that only half of the school went up. The other half of the school was evacuated. It never detonated. So the carnage could have been far worse. Yeah, he bombed the school, killed his wife, leveled his farm. And, the worst attack of domestic, I mean, nothing else to call it, but domestic terrorism. He used dynamite in his own Ford truck, I guess. Well, not a car, Ford truck. It was packed with nuts, bolts, and other machine parts. He turned it into, I mean, he understood how to create shrapnel bombs. And my mother and father lived in Bath, as did my older brothers, in the early 1960s. And so there's still people walking around at that time that had been permanently disfigured and maimed by that school bombing in 1927. This day in history, 90 years ago today in Bath, Michigan. We'll be right back.